the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Hi, my name's John. I'm the youth worker here. I'm just extending my welcome because that's what we do. We say hello. Before I carry on, to give us a moment of pause and regathering, just on your tables, I would like you to talk to each other and share, when was the last time that you can remember being scared? Off you go. Cool. Can't do everyone, sadly. But I wonder how many people might have shared stories of spiders or of roller coasters, maybe a film, maybe there's somebody in your house that's very good at hiding around corners. I had a friend who once stood behind his front door for 20 minutes waiting for his wife to come home purely so he could jump out at her. They're still married. Today we're thinking about fear, we're thinking about being scared, we're thinking about being anxious, maybe. And there's that sort of fear where we're like, ooh, suddenly that's a bit scary. But there's another sort of fear or anxiety or stress or emotion where things feel like they can just surround us. Where it's not just we're dealing with one moment, but actually where maybe we feel like there isn't a plan B here. There's not an escape plan. We just have to deal with what's surrounding us. Today, I need to remember to do this. We have a new reveal on our exciting artwork, which is very cool. And today, our little truth that we're going to remember and learn is... Oh, blue tack stayed behind. God is the present one. We're not talking Christmas. It's a different type of present. Sometimes when we're feeling surrounded by stuff, when we're feeling that things are inescapable, it can be because of other people's stuff. It can be because of social media or maybe the news or maybe things that are happening to people we care about. But sometimes it's our stuff. And I think that's even harder, actually, when we're trapped by ourselves and by our own emotions and our own circumstances. And we can feel paralyzed and ignorant as to what to do next. I'm going to tell you a story of when I first learned what genuine fear was. I went to school up north, and there was a man there who has literally no photo of this person exists. I spent a long time ploughing through old yearbooks and everything. He doesn't exist, but he does. His name was Mr. Rawlinson, and he was my GCSE and A-level history teacher. He is the scariest man walking the planet, if he's still here. I genuinely don't know if he's still alive. Now, Mr. Rawlinson, this is an important thing you need to know. He never shouted. He didn't have to. He managed his classroom with a softly spoken terror. If you did the slightest thing wrong, you would get a detention. You would get extra homework. You would get a withering put down that ate at your soul. He was so good at just destroying people for any step out of line. And it helped me that my older brother had been taught by him, and he quite valued my older brother, and so I was already at like a step below. And here we get to John in his A-levels, and he is not doing particularly well. He is not working particularly hard. And Mr. Rawlinson summons me to a one-to-one in his office outside of normal lesson time. And I remember getting off the bus that day, and for genuinely one of the very first times, I prayed to know courage and to know the presence of God with me, because I was going into the lair of the beast and I had nothing else with me. I had no plan, I had no work, I had no excuses, and I didn't know what to do. Pause. We're going to instead talk about Gehazi. Now here's... I always struggle to find images of Bible people. This is something. Gehazi went through fear. And we wonderfully experienced the story this morning. If you big Belmont points if you knew who Gehazi was before this morning. If you want to know more about him, he does pop up a couple of other times in the Book of 2 Kings. Basically, from chapter 4 to chapter 8, he pops up. And any time he pops up, he kind of gets it wrong, quite spectacularly. And his biggest mistake, consistently, is that he's always bothered about what is here, about what is in front of him. He's never bothered about what God is going to do. And I find this fascinating because, as Simon said, Gehazi's hanging around with Elisha. Now, if you're hanging around with a guy who routinely is miraculously generating food, miraculously healing people, miraculously bringing dead bodies to life, I think maybe you'd expect God to do stuff. But yet, here we are in Dothan in the morning. Gehazi throws open his curtains, and he has like a bit of a C-3PO moment. He panics, he runs away, he's screaming, "I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do, help, 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 help." He loses all his hope, he surrenders to fear, and he runs to Elisha in a panic. And what happens? Elisha prays for him, and he gets this miraculous moment where he sees this heavenly army. Now here's the thing, I don't think it's just that is the miracle. But I think it's more than that, because I think he sees something bigger. I think he sees that God surrounds the issue, that God is present, and that nothing can compete with God's power, God's strength, and God's authority. And the really cool thing is it has this incredible, unexpected resolution. Because, yeah, in the moment, Gehazi has some assurance, he has some hope. But what comes next? When I was reading this for preparing, and I heard, oh, the army's been blinded. Swordy, swordy, stabby. That's what comes next, isn't it? I mean, it's the Old Testament. That's what happens. But no, what happens is we have wonderful food that gets provided. And it actually says in the Bible at the very end, it says the Aramites were never a problem again. God takes this moment of being present and he turns it into generational peace. Wow, that's amazing. That is so unexpected. That is not a solution that Gehazi had when he woke up going, ah! He didn't think about that as a possible outcome. I think he was thinking, how do I not die in the next couple of hours? And instead, what God went is, well, I'm just going to solve this for the rest of the generations and they're never going to be a problem again. God's authority and his power surrounded the situation and he was present in it. It reminds me of a story from the Bible that Jesus was it's not a story Jesus told, it's something Jesus did. And you can read this in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. I like Mark's version. It's the stilling of the... Oh, sorry, I missed that slide. It's the stilling of the storm. I like Mark's version because I like the emotion and the rawness in it. So if you're not familiar with the story, there is a boat. The disciples are on the boat. Jesus is in the boat. Jesus is asleep. The disciples are like, ah, la, 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 and then a storm happens. A storm happens to such an extent that the disciples are terrified. It is, imagine this, it must be rolling, it must be scary, there must be lightning, thunder, everything, blowing and billowing. And what do the disciples do? So in Mark's gospel, in Matthew's gospel, they're like, teacher, please. In Mark's gospel, they go, oh my goodness, don't you care, we're going to die! At Jesus while he's asleep, which I think is quite a bold approach when you're talking to Jesus. But that's what they do. They say, don't you care, we're going to die? And Jesus wakes up and he does, and I wonder what the disciples expected him to do. Like, panic with them? Maybe encourage them gently with some nice words? Maybe go, row that way. That's where the shore is. But he doesn't. He stands up and he really calmly says, peace be still. And the storm stops. And then he turns to the disciples and he says, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? And I don't think he's telling them off there. I think he's trying to open their eyes. I think he's going, guys, I'm here. I'm present. I'm in the boat. And I'm also surrounding this chaos. Yeah, it's terrifying. Storms often in that time, storms ain't called, like, you know, people getting lost. But I'm surrounding this with my power and my authority. And the disciples, they never had that as a plan. They never had that as a solution. They weren't like, if we wake up the master gently, he will obviously solve all this. No. God massively exceeded expectations, massively redeemed and restored a situation. I just wanted to give you a real life sort of landing point for how I think this plays out. I say I knew fear with Mr. Ronson. I never really knew fear until I had children, because there's nothing scarier than looking after another human being, especially when somebody else is quite invested in them as well. And me and Martha regularly will stress and will worry and will panic and will have fear around the boys and how their lives are going. We try to do what we can to love them. We try to do what we can to point them towards God, but there are times we forget. And because usually it's because emotion surrounds us. Chaos surrounds us. Recently, we were having a standard twin toddler day, which is chaotic and stressful. And we got to dinner time, and we have a telepathic bond where clearly we were going, let's just get to bedtime. We can press reset and start again tomorrow. And the boys were fractious. We were struggling. And we just started eating dinner. And then Asher very loudly said, pears. Asher is not fond of pears specifically. Asher is trying to say prayers, because he was just reminding us, we haven't prayed for dinner yet. And reflecting, and now I'm not saying that because I'm like, oh, look at us, we're amazing parents that our children beg to pray. No, I highlight the chaos and the panic and the stress. But it reminded me as I wrote this, that sometimes remembering that God's there, it lifts your head up. It reminds you of his authority that surrounds even the mundane chaos, even the mundane struggly mess. God surrounds it, God changes it, and God redeems it. And that's the point of today's story. Life is scary. Life is hard. And let's not diminish that. Life can be tragic and it can be sad. But always God surrounds it. Always. When we open our eyes and remember that he is present with us, it gives us that hope. But we can also pray with boldness for him to redeem a situation, for him to restore something, for him to bring him out. And a situation that is so much bigger than we could ever possibly imagine. If you're wondering, whilst meeting with Mr. Rawlinson, my RE teacher, Mr. Bradley, came along. He was my favourite teacher. Coincidentally, thank you, he decided to walk past the office and chipped in. It was a lovely tutorial. I got an A on my coursework. Oh. And I'm not saying pray and you get good grades. I'm really not saying that. But I do think that in that moment, when you remember that God is present, he is with you, giving you hope, but you also let him work into a situation. Let him bring about a higher redeeming thing, a more perfect and kingdom-focused world, frankly. And that's what I kind of want to leave you with, is to think there might be things in our lives at the moment that are very normal but are very hard, but God is the present one. He's there with you in it, and he's surrounding it as well. And in surrounding it, he can do something bigger and even more incredible. I'm going to give you some time to talk on your table. Here are three questions that you might want to just chat through. And then when the time has passed, abstract as that concept is, Laura and the band are going to lead us in worship. Thank you.